some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. This is Tuesday, April 26, 2011. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. And my co-host tonight, as always, is Ray Dieter from the DBA Bars. How are you, Ray?
I'm all right, man. How you doing?
How was your weekend?
My weekend was good. We had the Cask Festival. It was Easter time. We had Chop Chop at the Brooklyn DBA. And it was good food, good beer, and good times.
So it's spring and DBA Brooklyn's rocking.
Absolutely, man. It was fun.
All right. I'll give a shout-out to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. It's your online connection to the world of craft beer. Check out the Beer Cloud, the mobile app, and many other things about beer education on GreatBrewers.com. We're also supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, an association of 27 New York City beer bars that serve, promote, and support good beer. Check out GoodBeerSeal.com. If you have any questions, you can email us at BeerSessions@gmail.com, or you can call live tonight, 718-497-2128. Our first guests tonight are some cool guys from one of the Good Beer Seal bars, the 124 Rabbit Club in the West Village, Drew Bouchon and Aaron Fisher. Ray, have you ever been to 124 Rabbit Club in the West Village?
I haven't got out there yet. I'm too busy working at my own bars, but I got a question. Well, how did you come up with that name? Why is it called that?
It's actually from the block. Minetta Tavern back in the 1890s was actually called the Black Rabbit Club. And got closed in 1900 for live sex acts.
Oh, cool.
Reopened in pre-prohibition time. It was a madame named Eve opened it up and then got arrested for having lesbian paraphernalia. She was selling lesbian novels or something out of the bar and got closed down again. So we're the third. Well, Black Rabbit is obviously a bar in Brooklyn, but I wanted to keep.
That's so weird that there'd be any you know gay people in the West Village.
Exactly. Or on that street. I mean, that street has been known to be pretty wild
and
for
it's
a
also
long time.
It's a really beautiful street too. Minetta Lane is gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah. Minetta Lane for sure. Yeah. McDougal. We're right on McDougal, which is
well, that's really ugly.
Really ugly.
It's tricky.
We call it Little Cancun.
So, Drew, have you find it hard to be a craft specialty beer bar in the West Village?
A lot of us, a lot of the regulars call it a little oasis. Kind of. Right. We're the only bar on the block that has no neon. And I was worried about it at first, of course. You know, the it's known for a lot of fighting, throwing up, you know, not to mention names, but there's some big-name bars on that block that are a little crazy.
But you guys really are an oasis. So you go down the little steps, kind of like Jimmy's Number 43. You go down the stairs.
Good plug.
And then there's not much of a sign.
The cops made me put up a sign.
A little sign.
It's about four inches tall.
Got a little sign. A
little sign,
and,
black door.
It's misspelled.
You've got some really great beers.
We do all European bottles. I keep about 80 of them on. Know them all really well. And moved. We had sandwiches in the beginning, but then wanted to bring in some American kegs. So we're doing three lines, always rotating them. All American.
Three draft lines?
Draft lines, yeah, that's it.
Do you guys
do
any casks?
No. Tricky cask, no. I just haven't messed with it yet. And of course, we've had Alex Hall in a few times. But, right.
So it's pretty unique that you guys are focusing on European beers in these times.
I didn't want to play on that, just on that block is just, 50-cent PBRs, and I didn't want to play that game, and I'm too old, too many fights and throw up. I wanted to, the Leipziger Ghost, the first time I had that, I'd never had it before, coming from a cocktail bar background, the Leipziger Ghost actually turned me on to a beer. You know, it's such a strange beer and such a delicious thing. I was like, I could do this. You know, this is great.
Hmm.
And hopefully turn people on to some old world beer that no one's had. So.
And so, Aaron, you work at 124 Rabbit Club.
Yeah.
And you also work at some other beer bars, too.
Yeah. I work above Jimmy 43's at Standings, which is the sister bar to Burp Castle. And I've been there the past few months, in addition to being at the Rabbit Club over a year and a half now.
All right. What are some of the beers that I would go to the 124 Rabbit Club to try that I may not find in other bars?
Well, I'm pouring you our newest arrival from Evil Twin, McKellar's brother, I guess, is this is the disco beer. I went through a crazy sour phase that all I did was sours. Well, not my favorites of the 80 beers. We had six or seven sours that I fell in love with, and I've been promoting those pretty well. So I brought in a few of them. This one, the disco beer, named after disco bitch champagne, I guess. It was the inspiration of it. And it's a sour beer, IPA, aged in Chardonnay barrels. And so we have a just interesting, rare, weird beers.
So you have 80 beers, 80 bottles. And
around,
it's always able? Always 80, or do you?
No. I change the menu once a week. Every Wednesday, I bring in three new ones.
Right.
Try and get rid of three new ones.
A few go off, and a few come on.
We have our house beers for sure.
What were some of the kegs that you had on this week?
Well, the kegs. I mean, like you said, we do three American beers, and we don't tend to feature those. I know this week we have Brooklyn Summer Ale, we've got the Bear Republic Racer 5 IPA, and then also the Stouts Pilsner from Pennsylvania.
I love Stouts Pilsner.
Yeah, and those are great to mix it up. But I think the Rabbit Club, maybe like your guys' bars too. A lot of customers come in and just sort of say, "I drink Sierra Nevada," or "I love Delirium Tremens," but what else can you give me?
Well, the American IPAs, I mean, you can't deny that that's
it's
completely different style, and we couldn't do it in the European. I mean, a lot of the European beers obviously are taking American Cascades and all that, but it's like
that could bring us to a good question. I mean, you know, there's this kind of intro beers that people know of. You said like Sierra Nevada, Delirium,
right?
Ray, are there any intro beers that you often try to turn your people on to better beers?
You know, it's funny. A lot of the Stouts beers are really good. The Stouts American Pale Ale is a really great IPA. It's not too intimidating. It's very accessible. Their Pilsners also, you know, if you're drinking a Budweiser and somebody turns you on to a Stouts Pils, that's, you know, it's definitely a step up, but it's not intimidating. It's not crazy hoppy. It's got great malt flavor to it. It's great. You know, it's just a great beer all around.
It really
is. And, there's a bunch of them that are really good like that. I mean, Sierra, we always talk about Sierra as being like a gateway beer. You know, Stouts, Anchor Liberty is another one.
You know what our gateway beer was for a long time? It was Chimay. We always had Chimay. Right. We had the Chimay White on draft.
The White.
Yeah. And after a while, we stopped selling it, and people were asking for it. And
then
we could steer them to a lot of other Belgian beers. And you know what? We don't carry Chimay anymore.
Yeah, it's tricky. I don't know if you guys go through this. When we talk about it at the Rabbit Club, trying to not necessarily pick beers, I would say around 5 to 10% of the people take a look at this long, kind of intimidating menu, and pick the first thing they recognize. A lot of times, that's Delirium, even if they don't really like it.
Right. Chimay.
And yeah, people order Chimay. We carry Chimay Blue, which is a quad, and a lot of people just pick it, and you end up finding out that really they like the Rouge, or they like the, you know. And so I think it's a trick, and I think a lot of responsibility falls on the bartenders and the owners and the managers to find people who can communicate. You know. Take the customers on a sort of journey.
Yeah, you know, it's funny as my palate's evolved, as I've gotten used to new beers, I've kind of gone away from a lot of the Trappist beers. A lot of them are kind of sweet, more towards saisons. We've talked about that a bunch of times. But you know, I had a magnum of Chimay, the Grand Reserve, a magnum of it, and it was sitting in my basement for quite a while. And I was like just cleaning things out, and I brought that magnum upstairs and I cracked it. And Tom Peters from Philadelphia was down there, the guy that owns Monk's Cafe. We shared that magnum, and it was so good.
Really?
It wasn't like any Chimay that I had ever had before.
They age different in bigger bottles, right? With the
Barrel. Yeah, I know in wine they talk about, you know, is it better in a magnum or is it better in a 750? But I'll tell you what, that magnum of Chimay was just outstanding.
They're amazing.
We should all just buy magnums.
That's just it, is that people start equating Chimay with just good beer, and they just order whatever it is. But, you know, sometimes people just don't like quads or just don't like wheat beers.
Well, like I said, I'm not a big fan of the Trappist beers. I'm not saying they're bad.
Yeah.
A lot of them are a little kind of sweet and cloying. And when you have like a good Saison DuPont beer,
right?
That's a really crisp, wonderfully palate cleansing beverage.
I definitely still go for the Orval, but
Orval's great. Yeah, that's great. That's an exception.
Drew, you just poured another beer for me. What is this?
This is the Ictogems. This is one of our house sours that we love. For a while, we were getting the run about Grand Cru in little bottles, and I was selling it, you know, hand over fist, you know, just hundreds of them. And they switched to the bigger bottles, and, you know, not a lot of people want to be introduced to a huge bottle of Rodenbach Bach Grand Cru. So I found this in the interim just to get a smaller bottle, the Ikta Jim's Grand Cru. It's Flemish red, and it's actually aged in oak barrels as well, mm-hmm. which is rare for those. A lot of them are in steel. And actually, when I visited Rodenbach a couple years ago, and Rudy, brewmaster there, actually had this in his fridge.
Totally, I'll take some more of that. Totally, sure. Totally, you know, I'll tell you what's nice about this show is that we're actually going to have some special guests coming on in a few minutes. But it seemed like in the last few years, more and more of the beer scene in New York especially has been, you know, focused on American craft beer.
Right.
And last fall, I put together an event called Battle of the Belgians, and my point was actually to showcase all the great American breweries that were making Belgian style beers and kind of show up the Belgians. And the more we looked into it and the more beers we tried, we realized that, you know what, Belgium is underrepresented. I think that a lot more people should know more about Belgian beers and don't know enough about them. And, you know, they might have just got stuck at Delirium Tremens and Chimay. And I think now that people are getting into American craft beer, I think that, I think this year people are going to start doing a lot more digging into Belgium. We just did a sour and lambic event at Jimmy's
Food. I was there. It was
pretty great. Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah.
And these Ikdegem and stuff. And, so I think that this is our year to explore Belgium. On that note,
right.
I'm gonna give it away. We got some special guests here tonight. They just flew into New York. It's the 30th anniversary of Van Berg and DeWolf.
Flew in.
Wendy Littlefield and Don Feinberg. They're here tonight, and I'm gonna introduce you to Wendy Littlefield right now, who's gonna say hi.
Hello there. Nice to be here. We actually sailed right into Brooklyn Harbor on the Queen Mary and arrived this morning at 6.
Are you serious? The Queen Mary?
Yeah.
Into Red Hook, right?
Two. Yeah, exactly.
So you actually know how to travel. So this is we have the whole show to talk to you guys and Drew and Aaron and now we're talking about Belgian beers. We're not going to talk about American craft beer, even though we all love it. We're going to try to teach you guys a little bit about Belgian beers. So, Dawn, it's your first time on the show. We met Wendy before. Tell us, what got you started? How did you decide to go to Belgium and start becoming an importer of beer?
Well, like all good stories, it has no sense to it. You just happen into things. I had a Dutch girlfriend, which Wendy knows. And no, I went to Belgium originally as a student. And when I was in college anyway, I didn't actually drink beer, believe it or not, except for on Fridays and Saturdays by prescription. and I got to Belgium. I'm really a foodie, and in Belgium you just cannot avoid beer as being part of the food culture. So for me it was something I automatically was interested in. And you know, you'd go to any bar, any small pub, and you'd have 20-30 beers to choose from, and I was fascinated, and that's how it started.
So to give people a little background, what are some of the more well-known brands that you guys import?
Well, we've been doing this. Yeah, you were nice enough to say it's our 30th anniversary, and we really were. I think the fun thing to say is that when we first started importing Belgian beer, there was none. There was nothing here in the States, including Stella. And the first beer we ever brought in was Duvel, but we've also brought. We were the first to bring in Rodenbach, which you talked about. We were first to bring in Affligem. We were first to bring in Frank Bone. So we've been really sort of breaking the ice on a lot of these beers.
Thank you.
Yeah,
and it's always a pleasure, and but it was you know, in the beginning, you talked to you were referring to sort of the what people do know about Belgium. In the beginning they were just too much flavor, actually, right? That was the problem. You know, a lot of people just couldn't handle it, and they were looking, you know, session beers at that time ruled. Now we've sort of maybe gone full cycle, and people are getting back interested in session beers. And that makes some of the Belgians still seem heavy.
Mm-hmm.
But that whole yeast profile, that whole sort of very, very fruity aroma profile and low hop, relatively speaking, was something that Americans originally found difficult. So that's all right. How we...
Ray, you've been around for a while, so have I. But when did you first meet Wendy and Don?
Well, you know, I've met Wendy years and years ago. And I've only met Don a few times over the course of years at different events.
I don't really exist there.
That's right. In fact, I didn't think you existed until just recently. But no, I've known these guys since... Well, DBA opened up in 1994 in Manhattan. And Wendy came around very shortly after we opened up. You remember sitting there with, experimenting with some beverages with you.
Well, we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about, if you've heard of Saison DuPont and Scaldis, that's what these guys are importing here on Beer Sessions Radio.
Beer Sessions Radio.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, and I'm here with Ray Dieter from the DBA Boys.
Hey, Jim.
Ray, this is a fun show. We're drinking Belgian beer. We're drinking Ichtigum, hanging out with the guys from 124 Rabbit Club. And we got Don and Wendy from Van Berg and the Wolf. It's pretty cool.
Great stuff, man.
I think it must be tough when you're an importer. You know, you've got your own brand, but you know, you at some point you build up these brands of beer, and you may or may not have them forever. So people may identify you with your beers. Is that the case? I seem that happens with a lot of importers. Where you're like, oh yeah, they had Chimay or they had this, and then next year they don't.
I think so. I mean, I used to make a joke that, you know, nobody talks to Tom Cruise's agent. They all want to talk to Tom Cruise. So, you know, when you're identified with these products, I think it's good and bad. But, you know, the world changes. We've had a lot of breweries that have been sold or have been bought by larger companies. And the great thing about being an importer is you're sort of an editor, and you're sort of looking for things that you think is worth people's attention. I think that, you know, when we first began, as I said, maybe the choice was the problem. There wasn't enough choice. Now I think the problem's different. Now I think really it's trying to help people make good choices. And we try really hard to choose beers that we think are worth people's attention.
I know. I mean, back a while ago, it was that there was Belgian beer, there was German beer, there's, you know, English beers and American beers. Now we have beers coming in from Italy, we have beers coming in from Denmark, absolutely, we have beers coming in from all over the place.
Yeah.
Japan.
We just brought one in from Sri Lanka. That's the big
Sri Lanka.
Yeah. The Lion Stout, of course.
Wow. Oh, the Lion, right. Yeah. But there's so many new markets opening up with great beer.
Yeah. Well, to give an example of that, we were in Belgium for 3 months, and we actually hopped over the border and went to Norway and went to Italy on little
in that order?
Mini vacations.
Yeah.
Yes, in that order. But we were at a great cafe in Iseringen in the Pajottenland, and they were a little bar that's only open normally on Sunday from 10 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon, and after funerals, was having a tasting
best
of
time to drink Belgian beer, by the way.
After a funeral?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
Was having a tasting of Italian, Italian craft brews and American craft brews. Okay, so this Belgian lambic bar was doing that tasting. And it was there that we met a fantastic Italian brewer. So since we met him in Belgium, we're actually going to be bringing in some Belgian-influenced Italian beers later in the year. So the whole world is jihad and McWorld at the same time.
Well, let's go back a little bit to kind of build your pedigree. So the two of your top brands that we love and that you have now, Scaldis and Saison DuPont.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell us how you met those guys, how you started working with them.
Well, Saison DuPont was really, that was totally fortuitous. Wendy and I have always known Michael Jackson, the writer, not the singer. And Michael said to me, we were actually in Philadelphia, and he said, you had to get to Saison DuPont. And I said, why? I said, because really I think it's one of the best beers I've ever had, and nobody knows about it. And he was, you know, right on two counts. One was nobody knew about it, but the other thing, it was a great beer, but they were within, when we got there and we went to sort of talk to them and meet with them, they were within 2 months of stopping to make Saison DuPont.
Really?
Yeah, which is really incredible.
And you stopped that. You actually got them to continue making it.
Well,
it,
as often as the case, you arrive at a brewer, they have what they sell best and what they're proudest of. So we arrived and we wanted Saison DuPont. And he said, well, what about Monette, which is another beer that they make,
sure,
which is a very good beer. And it was their top seller, still is to this day their top seller.
Monette.
Yeah. Monette, yeah.
They make the Monette, they make the Foray.
They make Bière de Miel.
Right,
they make
Avec
le Bon Vieux, which is a fantastic Christmas
beer. Right,
their
holiday beer.
Saison DuPont, they make Monette Brun.
Okay. Now, I was at the brewery, and I had a Pilsner. I've talked to you about this, Wendy. I had a Pilsner that was bottled only, as they do out there, and it was the best Pilsner beer I ever had in my entire
life. Coming this week.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Not this week. She's a little ahead of the game.
Radar Pills. Yeah, we're bringing it
to New York City.
Really?
Yeah.
Radar,
but it's not bottled now. Now it's kegged.
It's kegged.
Yeah, now it's kegged.
Is it going to be as good as it was?
Yeah, tell them why they make it.
Tell them why they make it. I'm not sure what Wendy's thinking about.
Well, because they only make ales except for...
Well, Radar Pills.
Yeah.
Radar
yeah.
Pills.
But I mean...
It's to keep their yeast healthy.
Oh, really? It keeps... Because I was told that it will never be ever in America, and they don't sell it anywhere outside of the village where the brewery is located.
Yeah, you know, things change.
Wait, Wendy, let's go back. This is interesting, you know, anecdote about breweries. So you're saying they're making the pills to keep their yeast healthy. Well, how does that work?
No.
No,
let him go. Now
come on, tell us.
So, you know, it's good that you have some adult supervision in this talk here. No, they have.
Who would that be?
What happens is they actually use a bottom fermented yeast for their pills. But because what Wendy's referring to is when you're running two yeast strains, you don't want to use more than one yeast strain if possible. At least that's the Belgian theory, because we do open fermentation. So what this does is it helps keep their whole microclimate. They have to keep their brewery completely spotless clean, or they'll know it from one beer or another.
Right. And that's what they use. It is really clean out there.
It's fantastic.
Spotless.
Yeah. So, and of course, he feels very strongly that microbiologically speaking, if he can make a good clean pills that's very stable, he knows his brewery is operating at peak performance. And that's really what he does. Because pills will show flaws. Pills will, really indicate the state of your brewery.
The litmus test.
Yeah. Here, huh? It's like a rabbit It's like a canary in a coal mine.
Or a rabbit in a coal mine. Whatever.
Or a rabbit hole in a brewery.
And I got to say, the brewery, for a farmhouse brewery, when you think farmhouse, you think it's going to be kind of funky and kind of,
yeah.
And I've been to some pretty funky breweries out there, but this place is spotless. It's amazing. Yeah. And their bread and their cheese
is amazing. So Saison DuPont was on the verge of closing.
Absolutely.
And it was you guys importing them to America that saved them.
No, they were going to close, not the brewery, but the beer.
Oh, the beer.
They were going to discontinue Saison DuPont. It was down to less than 2% of their volume. As we speak today, it's almost 50% of their volume, and it's their fastest growing product. And when I went to them, I said I wanted to import Saison DuPont. They said, what about Moinette? Which, as I started to tell you, is often what the response you get. And I said, no, actually, I think the beer that you have that's most unique and really the most remarkable is Saison DuPont. And I have to say, the one thing that they did that was really great was some brewers are small and sort of stuck in their ways. Saison DuPont and Brewery DuPont has always been open-minded, and they've always been, willing to try to do what they need to make consumers enjoy their products. So one of the first things we did was, we're one of the few beers you might have noticed that are in champagne splits.
Yep.
That, aren't many brewers who do that except for the Lambic brewers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in Belgium, if you weren't a Lambic brewer, you didn't do splits.
Right.
And we said, but we think splits would be a great way for, bars.
Right. So what we're talking about is beer served in 750 bottles, much like a wine, and corked like a wine, finished like a wine.
Cage.
And these guys, cage cork, yep. And then these guys were doing half-size
bottles.
Yep.
Right.
And which is almost about, it's like 11 ounces.
12.7.
12.7, 12.7 ounces. And you're right, there's very few of them that do those small
bottles. And it made, the importance of that was it made a great table presentation for people. It immediately caught people's attention and got them a lot of immediate interest here in the States.
I want to add 2 points to that, too. Last year, the most imitated style of beer for American microbrewers was the Saison style all. And that, to me, that's just incredible that it was the endangered style of Belgium and has been championed by Americans. And then the other point I wanted to make is that we're going to have 12 beers from DuPont in circulation in the United States this year. So it's a very dynamic and exciting brewery. They're growing pretty steadily at a rate of about 10% a year, which is certainly bucking the trend of most Belgian breweries right now.
Mm-hmm. So I was just handed this is the... What'd you hand me?
It's not DuPont. Well, that's one of the.
It's another brand.
Yeah, it is.
It is DuPont.
Well, you forget. Forget before you go to that brand. All right. Now
let's talk about Scalus.
The other Scalus. Tell us about Scalus.
Well, Scalus is a very interesting story because Scalus, Wendy, I think, mentioned that Scalus actually has the longest continuously made recipe beer in Belgium. It's also one of the oldest beers in Belgium. The brewery has been brewing in the same place.
That's the Busch Brewery, isn't it?
Exactly, Busch, mm-hmm. De Buisson. And they've been brewing in the same place since before Belgium was Belgium.
1789.
Yeah, and if you've ever visited the brewery, you can really imagine sort of like Napoleon's troops coming down and, quenching or slaking their thirst at the brewery.
Wow.
But Scaldus, which is very strong, as we all know, it's 12%. When we got introduced to them, they were in a situation where they were looking for, they actually needed to grow outside their home market. And this is the case now with lots of Belgian beers. But when we first met them, that strong a beer, there's only so much that, it's not a session beer. You cannot drink except for you.
Except for me. I can. True rabbit club.
Except for on certain crisp nights before Christmas. You're going to have one. And many of the better Belgian beers are brewed to have one and to really nurse.
Right.
And so when we met them, they were very, very interested in getting to the American market. And I think they showed a lot of foresight because they came in before, they've been here actually almost as long as we've been importing, which is the better part of 30 years.
Mm-hmm. So. They were also partners with us, the two cousins who ran the brewery at the time were partners with us when we built Brewery Omegang.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And they're doing great stuff. I think, you know, the interesting thing is they're innovating now as well.
All right. Uh-oh. We're going to take a short break. We'll be about to talk more about Three Philosophers and Hop Rooter on Beer Sessions Radio.
We've definitely got our thing together, don't we, baby? Isn't that nice? I mean, really, when you really sit and think about it, isn't it really, really nice? I can easily feel myself slipping and slipping more and more waves. That super world of my own. Nobody but you and me. We've got it together, baby.
Following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to Hot Grease every Monday at 3:30 p.m. Hot Grease strives to bring sustainability, localized sourcing, and other forward-thinking schools of culinary thought to the minds and kitchens of everyday folk. Each week, Nicole Taylor's conversations cover the entire spectrum of food enthusiasts, from internationally renowned culinary masters to moms on a budget looking to impress their tiniest critics. Again, that's every Monday at 3:30 p.m., Hot Grease on the Heritage Radio Network.
All right. Thanks for that message from Heritage Radio Network. Nicole Taylor, Hot Grease, check it out. She's awesome. She's involved in Brooklyn Food Coalition. You're just going to check it out, Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. We're back on Beer Sessions Radio here. Got some pretty cool guests, Wendy and Don from Van Berg and DeWolf. Two questions that I have to ask Don Feinberg. One, how did you come up with Three Philosophers? At one time, you owned Omegang, and you made this awesome beer that we still love.
Yeah, thank you very much. Sometimes it's good not to be, you know, too professional about things. So there was a contest that Wendy actually organized, and the winners, what you had to do is describe your favorite beer, not create the recipe, just to create the description. And two breweries were chosen, ourselves and Boonville out on the West Coast, Anderson Valley. And we did one of the winners, whose name was Noel Blake. And the name, Three Philosophers, Wendy can actually elaborate, but it has to do with a poem by William Blake. But Noel's description was fantastic, but it was impossible to brew. Impossible. Even though my brewer, Randy Teal, at the moment, who now works for New Glarus, if you guys know New Glarus, he tried his just really hard. But I went home and, you know, sort of trying to clue into what the descriptions were, which is a lot of fruit and a lot of depth and a lot of this and a lot of that. And I went home with just Omegang and three things: cherry juice, cherry lambic, and cherry herring. You know what cherry herring is?
No. What's cherry herring?
Cherry herring is a Danish cherry liqueur.
Uh-huh.
And I tried all three, and I just mixed it up in the kitchen. And I came back the next day and put the three things that I thought were worth paying attention to in front of my brewer. And I said, try this. And very happily for me, he got really angry and sort of jealous and said, what is this? How did you make this? Where did you get this? But the one that worked the best that was really interesting was the cherry herring didn't work, didn't marry. So it was too alcoholic, just sort of floated on top. The cherry juice was too pronounced, too sweet. The lambic blended perfectly.
Right.
And the sort of the moral of that story is lambic and blending are just as natural as, you know, sort of like fried eggs.
Most lambic beers are blended.
Yeah. Yeah. But they also blend well with other beers.
Right, gotcha.
Fantastic. And that's how we came up with Three Philosophers. And originally it was Frank Boone Lambic Creek. And then they switched, I think, the recipe now. I think they're using Lindemann's, or they might be back to Frank Boone. I don't know.
Okay, jumping ahead now to whatever, modern times. Hop Rooter.
Thanks,
you got this. Well, I don't know when these things happened, you know. You're on the, no, it's 2011.
You know.
You know, we've got this other great beer.
Boone about a month ago.
Van Bergen DeWolf's Hop Rooter.
Yeah, Hop Reuter is a great, we're very happy about that, because we call that beer imported from 1982, talking history, because that's when I was a student in Belgium, 1982. And that's when the golden ales of Belgium, even Duvel, much maltier, much more sort of hop forward, and much more aromatic on in general. They weren't as perfect, actually, as a lot of the goldens are now, but they had a lot of personality. So when we met, I was introduced to the Skelt Brewery, which is, makes very nice beers, and actually was voted, this is a bit of a crazy story, but it was voted the best brewery, microbrewery in Holland. And then they moved to Belgium. I'll explain that if you want in a minute. But they had some nice beers. And I just had this idea that we could come up with something funkier, more malt assertive. And that was, and Hop Reuter is it. I mean, what we've really done is we have three hops. We put one in the boil and we dry hop with two. And I'll tell you the two. Usually I try and be very Belgian and say, no, I can't tell you. But we dry hop with Saz and with Nelson Sauvin. And we just got a fantastic review saying, this is really makes me like kind of both blush and like get a big head at the same time, saying it was the, one guy said it's the best use of Nelson Sauvin that he's had, which is good because Nelson Sauvin's a difficult hop.
This
great
is
hop,
the,
but a
this
difficult
is the
hop.
Top Dutch beer critic. Uh-huh. Who's just crazy about this beer, and he tasted it at Zithos and sent us a really beautiful note about how it's better than the ones that he's been tasting when he judges beers in New Zealand, where they're
and Zithos, that's the Belgian beer festival,
the big
Belgian
one.
Craft beer festival, just outside of Antwerp, I believe, right?
Yeah, but I think like the important thing, kind of the general conversation we're having about all the different beers and the beers you have at your bar. I mean, I think I am a big proponent that perfect is not always better.
I agree.
And, you know, and a beer with flaws can be wonderful. You know, they can't overwhelm the basic goodness of the beer, but character does come, a lot of times come from that slight imperfection or that slight inconsistency. And sometimes you get that by having a less clean beer or a less, you know, basically technically perfect beer.
Right, right. I mean, that's sort of like all those happy accidents occur.
Yeah. And you talked about your Magnum. I mean, one of the things you're really appreciating there is the oxidation. And you just like the way the oxidation worked out in that beer.
And speaking of happy accidents, another meeting that we had in Belgium, we're bringing in beers from a brewery called Dillewins, which is in the town of Dendermonde. And actually, the driving force behind the brewery, which is Belgium's newest brewery, is a young woman who's 24 years old. And her dad is a home brewer of some repute. And he was at Zithos a couple of years ago tasting their Vicaris Triple. Mm-hmm. And he was next to the Girardin booth.
You know Girardin.
And Girardin makes really great lambic.
Yep.
And they were tasting each other's beers. And there was a little bit of Girardin in his glass when he poured the triple. And he tasted it. He said, oh, that's really amazing. Happy accident.
Right, right, sure.
We have to make this. So they got together. And the first beer that we'll be bringing in from them is a blend of Vicaris Triple and Girardin Gueuze. And it's unbelievably delicious.
So it's a triple and a Gueuze. No fruit.
No fruit.
All malt.
All malt.
Wow, that sounds really fascinating.
And we love wild beer, so.
Uh-huh.
Sour and wild is.
You know, I just said I was drinking the La Chalet Frambois. I know you guys don't bring that in, but it's I thought that was like a lambic style, a French lambic style, but it's not. It's a saison beer that's sweetened with
raspberries.
Fresh raspberries,
Yeah.
Really, really delicious combination. I never thought of it as a
saison. I'm
going
to go back to the rabbit and just start mixing beers right now.
Yeah.
it's a good place to start. Yeah. You'll be amazed. I mean, we have another beer
cocktail
that we're very proud of is called Lambrucha. And Lambrucha is a blend of kombucha, which is fermented tea.
Yeah, well, mushrooms, right?
Yeah, well, a mushroom to get it started.
Yeah.
And by the way, in that mushroom is a fair amount of Brettanomyces.
Right.
But it's Brettanomyces that's used to a tannic environment in the tea.
Okay.
And lambic. And I tell you, it's just one of the most, it's really one of the most quenching, refreshing things you've ever had, because it has the acidity of lambic and it has the tannic cleansing of
And it's got alcohol.
But low, 3.5%.
And it's still good for a hangover.
No. I think Ray's right. It has alcohol, which I don't know if you know, but kombucha
has a trace element of alcohol.
Yeah, they get into trouble and get pulled off the shelves if it goes too high. But ours will stay on the shelf.
Cool.
Will not be pulled.
And when is that going to be available?
Tomorrow. What's today? Tomorrow.
We're doing a special event Thursday at Jimmy's Number 43, the 30th anniversary party.
Fantastic.
For Van Bergen and DeWolf. Yeah.
Yes, please.
It's actually an early evening thing, from 5 to 8. We're going to have some special treats that Wendy coached us on. Tartines, just like little toasts with, you know, soft cheese and radishes and things like that. Water zooey and some mussels and other
Fantastic.
Stuff.
And oysters, I hope.
Oh, of course, Thursday night's oysters. But
that sounds great.
You know, this is a great conversation. It's taking us back to something that has come up a lot. you know, people identified hops with America, West Coast craft beer, but there's other people saying that, hey, the Belgians, you know, always used hops in their beers. Do you want to take us back about 100 years, Don, and tell us what kind of hops they were using, or what the beers were like in Belgium 100 years ago?
Back when you were a kid.
Yeah, exactly. This is getting bad.
In 1903, there were 3,000 breweries in Belgium at the time. Now there are 125, and when we started importing, there were 300.
When we started importing, there were 3,000.
No.
Oh, okay.
But the hops growing region is Poppering.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Poppering, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Poppering. But, you know, can I go back really historically? I mean, I think...
No.
One of the things that Belgium's famous for is there's some dispute as to who brought hops to whom. There's some people believe that the Flemish traders brought hops to England, and then there's some people contend, no, it was the Kent hop growers who brought it to Belgium.
Right.
But I would have to argue, because this is my very strong feeling, especially like you were talking about how many different people are brewing now. I think it's fair to say, if you need like sort of a roadmap to beer, I think that it is fair to say that the Americans are the pioneers and at this point the masters of using very accentuated hop profile in beer. And I think it's very fair
for
to
good
say,
and for evil, I believe.
Yeah, no, I think. And I think it's very fair to say that, you know, as an essence, what Belgium really knows how to do is yeast-driven aromas. I think that's really the important thing. And for example, in lambics, we do use more hops, by the way, than most even hoppy IPAs, but they're all aged hops, so you don't mm-hmm. taste it.
Right.
So we use more hops per kilo of water than almost any brewer in lambic, but there are dried hops, therefore the hop oil is broken down.
And also, lambic beers tend to be like pretty low in alcohol too. People don't,
yeah,
I don't
6% or less.
Or less. I know a lot of like 4%, 4.5%.
And what's going on there, of course, is when you lower your alcohol, theoretically you lower your flavor development potential.
I think that's a ton of crap.
Okay. I said theoretically. But what you get back is you do it through yeast. And obviously, mm-hmm. in the case of lambic, you're talking about hundreds of different kinds of yeast that participate.
Right. Just ambient yeast cultures that are like flying around the brewery.
Yeah. Not to mention the oak and other things that add to it. And I was going to say, I think Italy, I mean, we've really kind of fallen in love with Italy now. And we think they're doing a lot of the stuff that got us originally so in love with Belgian beers. I think that you can sort of begin to see the outlines of them becoming really the masters of using spices, additional spices, as they do in their cooking. I mean, mm-hmm. they're so good with spice because Belgians use a lot of spice, Americans do, but we had some of the most balanced and delicate use of spices we've ever had in beer when we went to Italy this trip. It was really
I just wish we could afford to drink the Italian beers.
And do you know, in the,
we're going to work on that part.
Please.
I have in front of me a summary of beers in Belgium that were known and popular in Belgium in 1903. And in 1903, lambic was the most popular beer style in Belgium.
Well, I guess at one point in history, that was the only kind of beer there was because they really hadn't gotten the whole
yeast
but
this was pretty late in the game, the 20th century. Yeah. And also, there were really only two places in Europe where wheat beers were popular from the Middle Ages onwards, and that was in Bavaria and Flanders. And it was because those provinces, those places were very wealthy. Mm-hmm. And so the brewers could afford to use wheat, which was normally consecrated for bread only. Yeah. In beer as well.
Yeah. And lambic beers are pretty much all wheat too, aren't they?
High wheat content.
High wheat content.
40%. Yeah. And unmalted. But to your point, correct, to your point specifically about the use of hops, what I do think that if you are going to get into the, let's call it the sort of next level of Belgian characteristics, what they do love and that they use much more than Americans do is what we call aromatic hops as opposed to bittering hops. So they really concentrate on lower acidity and higher floral quality. So that's Saz, that's Styrian, that's Kent Goldings, things like that. Mm-hmm. And you referred to the use of Cascade and Amarillo. These are really much stronger hops. And I can tell you a quick little inside story. Saison DuPont was worried about the availability of Kent Goldings because there's so much development going on in Kent. And so housing development.
Right, in England.
And so they were worried that they wouldn't get the crops. So they actually experimented with Cascades. And it just
went too far.
It just blew the beer out of the water.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's a really powerful hop.
Yeah, but they were trying to get it.
Don, another question, drawing on your many years of expertise, and Ray will join in on this: kegged beer versus bottled beer. The same beer, like Saison DuPont, is it different in bottle versus keg? And you know, elaborate.
Yeah, it's different.
Way different.
Yeah.
Let Ray answer.
It's a complicated story. I mean, I think the basics, I'll tell you from the brewer's standpoint. From the brewer's standpoint in Belgium, they always said if they could afford not to sell keg, they would because they didn't want to have a partner beyond the brewery. They didn't want to have
Cooper's partner.
Yeah, and also the pipes and the gas and the whole thing. But I would say, you know, of course, we love keg beer in America, and not without reason, because, you know, if you have a really fresh keg and it doesn't have any oxygen in it, you get a really clear flavor profile of the beer, especially if the guy knows what he's doing when he's pouring it, right?
Right, but also, I mean, a beer like Saison DuPont, you can't compare the keg version to the bottle conditioned version.
Right.
Because that bottle is its own miniature secondary brewery. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an unfiltered beer.
So you're saying that in bottle you could have something special happen like bottle conditioning.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Now, of course, you can do keg conditioning, which is the same as bottle conditioning at that point. But one of the things you really can't do, which I think Ray's touching upon, is a lot of our beers, Saison DuPont being the most prominent example, require a high degree of carbonation, pinpoint,
absolutely,
small carbonation. And you can get that in a bottle like champagne. Mm-hmm. You'd have the same problem putting champagne in a keg, quite honestly. You could do it. You could get a nice carbonation. You could even, you know, actually ferment it in the keg. But getting that intensity of carbonation is much harder in a keg. Right. And even if you get it, you then lose it in the line.
Well, the same thing happened with Duvel, too, when you brought Duvel in the Duvel Green,
yeah,
which, you know, it's funny. People compare the Duvel Green to Duvel in the bottle, and it's when you compare Duvel Green to a Pilsner, it's a really good decent Pilsner beer,
right?
And but it's not Duvel in a bottle; it's a different animal.
Right. Right.
Well, that goes way back to the beginning when Don first approached Duvel to import Duvel to the United States. There was a Duvel Green pasteurized coming into Texas, and Don, and that was typically just sold at the supermarket.
Is that with
in
Bellicus?
A bottle. Yeah. And he said, no. He said to Ben, no, that's not the one I wanted, the real Duvel. So the first time that the bottle-conditioned Duvel came into the country was with Don when he was 25.
Yeah. But I think the specific...
That was like 100 years ago.
Yeah.
200 years. No, I think for the listeners, I think the real issue, again, specific to Belgians, but it can be broadened, is if you have a bottle-conditioned beer, I don't care whether it's Belgian or it's Italian or it's Irish or it's American, that the divide is I would say bottle conditioning versus keg. I think that's a really big important difference.
Yes, that's the conversation.
Yeah,
and bottle conditioning for me always wins.
Well, I like that, and I think we can grow that in many future shows because it's about style of beer too. And we'll get into that. Let's do a quick question. It's an email question from a listener, and we have a great panel of guests here tonight for this one. This is from Anonymous. Next time, buddy,
my
at least
friend.
Say your first name and state.
I hate that guy.
Because we're tracking the world here. But Anonymous from somewhere in America. My brother-in-law is a wine snob who has finally taken my long-standing bet that I could turn him over to beer. He prefers full-bodied, dry red wines, though he will never turn down a nice white. I want to knock his socks off with right beer and then rub his face in it. What should I serve him? We'll start with Don. Don, win over that red wine drinking wine lover.
Well, I mean, we talked about it. I think especially as far as availability, I think Three Philosophers would be a great start for that. I really do. I think it has the depth of flavor. I think it has enough fruit in it. It's 8.5%. If they're making it the right way, it should be dry enough. So.
True, I'm at 124 Rabbit Club tonight.
I'd be worried about the dryness in the reds because the sweetness comes out in the sour Belgian reds are always very fruity. But we just cracked open this Petrus, which is sherry like almost, right? Just winey, dry, biting sourness. So I'd go with that.
Aaron from the Rabbit Club.
Yeah, I mostly agree with Drew there. The Petrus is my favorite beer, which is why we brought it today. My mother, who doesn't drink beer, when she comes into the Rabbit Club, I've also given her Rodenbach and Nicta Jims, and that has passed the test for her.
Right?
I don't know. I was thinking maybe a beer de garde, like a French style.
Castellan.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Castellan.
All right. Go there.
And I think trying a goose. A lot of when I've done tastings with women who say, "Oh, I don't drink beer at all." If you give them goose, they think of it as champagne.
We're talking about a wine connoisseur here. We're not talking about a lot of girls who hate beer love Lindeman's Frambois. I mean, mm-hmm.
Well, that's sweet,
though. I haven't had one of those in years. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've had. I really don't remember the last time I drank
one
of those.
Changed.
Right, they haven't changed. But we're talking about a wine connoisseur. So somebody's got a discerning palate. I think is not going to go for the Lindeman's. Not saying it's a bad beer, but I don't think that discerning. Yeah.
Rodenbach Grand Cru, I think.
Rodenbach Grand Cru came to my mind.
Here's one. Black IPA.
Don't get
that's
me started.
That's the next show. Next show we'll talk about black IPAs, but we're going to have to...
Black Albert from Stroyser.
All right.
Delphine.
And maybe Belgian stouts or something. Something with flavor and color and, you know, yeah, dryness on the finish. We're going to give a shout-out to the Good Beer Seal Bars. Tonight at Oscar Blues will be at the Pony Bar in Midtown West, which is a great beer bar.
Good bar.
Yep. If you're on the other side of Manhattan tonight, stop at Rattle and Hum for the Kuhnheim Brewery Total Tap Takeover. And Thursday, again, Wendy and Don at Jimmy's Number 43 for Van Bergen DeWolf's 30th anniversary. You can check out goodbeerseal.com for more information. I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com and the Good Beer Seal. Again, thanks to Ray, Wendy, Don, Drew, and Aaron for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Bree O'Connor. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This little refrain should help me explain. As a matter of fact, I like beer.
In 2010, EscapeMaker.com won an Emmy Award for their agritourism webisode. So this year they thought, why not bring agritourism and green getaway ideas right to you? Come to the Green Getaways Local Food and Travel Expo on April 30th at One Hanson Place, home of the Brooklyn Flea and former Williamsburg Savings Bank. Presented by Amtrak, Zipcar, and I Love New York, the carbon-free event will be a day filled with food, prizes, workshops, and kids' activities. Over 50 getaway destinations, from counties to local farms and bed and breakfasts within a day's drive or train ride of New York City, will be exhibiting on the main floor and in the huge bank vault downstairs. See what's hot in sustainable travel and receive special show-only discounts. Grow NYC will be doing workshops on the green market, and Appalachian Mountain Club will offer workshops on adventure bicycling and hiking via mass transit. EscapeMaker.com will be giving away over 50 getaway prizes, ranging from zipline adventure passes to an overnight stay at Mohonk Mountain House. Travel greener, eat local. Come to the expo on April 30th. Get your tickets now at www.escapemaker.com. The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.